The Production Expert Podcast with Mike Thornton, Julian Rogers, and Dan Cooper.
Welcome to the Production Expert Podcast number 399. It's December the 9th, 2019. So, 19.
Oh, that dates you. That dates
Oh, I know it does. I'm Mike Thornton, very old.
I'm Julian Rogers, nearly old. No, nearly old. Nearly as old.
Nearly old. And I'm Dan Cooper.
The young
one.
Young.
Yeah.
Now, before we get started, just wanted to let you know that we're planning a special podcast next week, which will be our last for 2019. We want to give you the opportunity to share your find of the week. So if you ever found yourself shouting at the computer or whatever device you use to listen to this podcast saying, "What about that thing?" Well, in next week's show, you will have the chance to share "What about that thing?" as your find of the year. So please use the Contact Us page on the site and you'll be able to select the Find of the Year in the drop-down menu and then tell us about what your find of the year is. And we'll put them all together and we'll share them in next week's podcast. Dan, what about the deals this week?
There's quite a few as the year draws to a close, yet there are still some great offers left over from the weekend offers from Acusonus, Antelope Audio, Avid, Editor's Keys, Focusrite, Isotope and PureMix, plus some new deals for December from Presonus, Sonarworks, Synchro Arts and Universal Audio. For all of those, check out our deals page.
Okay, let's move on to our talking points, and these are sponsored by Artoria.
Hello experts and listeners, Pro Tools Expert Talking Points is brought to you with the support of Arturia.
Arturia now has a wide selection of software effects, including three compressors, three filters, three preamps, and three delays you'll actually use. The latest release, three delays you'll actually use, includes Delay Tape 201, Delay Memory Brigade, and the unique and experimental Delay Eternity. A bundle of selected effects called the AudioFuse Creative Suite is included with all AudioFuse audio interfaces. Follow the link in the podcast notes or visit arturia.com to find out more on the effects you'll actually use, a must for any professional studio.
Okay, so the first talking point I wanted us to have a discuss around the virtual table is how many subscriptions do we each have and why? Now, of course, this has come out of Avid's move towards subscription models. So there's quite a few encouragements for people to perhaps move from a perpetual license over to a subscription by including the Avid Complete Plugin Bundle, as well as Heat if you are on a rental subscription. Again, one of the challenges we have is when we talk about subscriptions with regard to Avid, we're not talking about upgrade plans. So that's the annual fee that you pay to keep your software up to date. Now, I, for instance, have an Avid Ultimate upgrade plan, which I do keep up to date. I've just paid mine for the next year. And of course, that gives me the complete plugin, the Avid Complete Plugin Bundle just as well, which obviously includes the really useful things like the Pro Series compressor, limiter, etc. But as far as audio subscriptions is concerned, that's about as far as I take it. So, Dan, what about subscriptions for you? Where do you pay money for subscriptions?
Oh, in lots of places. So there's the Avid one. But you're saying subscriptions, and I'm going to say define subscriptions, because isn't that something that you pay regularly? So it could be monthly or annually for a service, and it could be a software service. So Pro Tools, for instance, and the Adobe stuff, or it could be other services such as accounting, website hosting. Do you know what I mean? There's a Dropbox, all these sort of things. And I did my books fairly recently, and that's where you really get to see, like, you know, your annual books right at the end of the year, and you go through and you think, wow, I've spent a lot of money on these subscriptions. I can cancel them any time, but I won't because they're bloody useful. I need them. Some smaller things. So let's say, well, actually, it's not small, being a business, having my website. So Squarespace for me costs, I think, about £22 roughly a month. Within that, I have another service called Jotform. Mike, I think you're aware of this one. It's a really good form builder. I use it to sell my services online. It's very simple. My clients like it because they can send me files directly to my website through that, and PayPal and all those sort of things. Really nice and easy. That's about 160 quid a year. I choose the annual plan because the monthly is slightly more expensive. We all know how that is. But then if you think about other services, so like, you know, the internet, actually just that alone, service provider subscription, that's monthly. That's about 50 quid. For a really powerful, big package service. What else? There's so many subscriptions. There's more, I think, things I subscribe to for running my business than the tools that I use. So there's the Avid one. Adobe, I can't remember off the top of my head what that was, but it's the cheap package.
So what do you have from Adobe? Presumably Photoshop,
it's just
Premiere.
Photoshop. Yeah, no. I'm a Final Cut user. I don't have the bigger package. I think James is on the bigger package because he moved over to Premiere, didn't he?
When he went Windows, yeah.
That's right. You have to ask him about that. And that's something I know I'm going to have to do if I move over to Windows. So that's for another day. But yeah, there's loads of things. Spotify, that goes in there as well. Which was actually, it's quite interesting. I got an email from Spotify the other day, and my wife did as well because we're in the family pack. And Spotify said, 2019, here are the top songs that you've listened to over the year. And the first number it showed was how many streams you've used in the last year. Mine was, I think, about 3,500 songs I've listened to, which was quite interesting because it kind of just gave me like a bit of an evaluation. This is how much value you've had out of Spotify in the last year. Really quite interesting. And Georgie's my wife, that was about 2,500. So for that one payment that I pay, because it's the family pack, whatever it is I pay for, we've listened to roughly 6,000 songs between us for however much that was over the year. What I want to say is, imagine if we got that with all of the other subscriptions that we use. So if we got one from Avid at the end of the year, well done, you've made 200 songs. Oh, and then you go, that's not a bad return really on my investment. Or, well done, you've only produced 3 songs in the last year of using Pro Tools. Maybe that wasn't a good investment, but Spotify kind of gave me some stats, which I thought was a bit amusing, but at the same time, yeah, good. So, you know, I'm more than happy to keep using Spotify. Julian.
Oh dear, I've been trying to spot any themes in what I do, because I mean, there's some obvious stuff. So I mean, we don't need to talk about, I don't know, like, I mean, Avid stuff. Okay, great. Adobe is an interesting case, just because I do the Adobe thing as well. For me, it's Photoshop. I use Photoshop all of the time. I've looked at using other things because I do have a big grumble. I mean, people love to grumble about Avid's subscription offer, because this is the direction of travel. I mean, basically, it's not just Avid, and this is what I keep saying to people, actually, it's not just Avid who are trying very hard to transition their users over to subscription. The entire software industry is going that way at different rates, but you know, that's all it is. It's not just Avid. Don't blame Avid for the fact that it's 2019, you know, and some people can afford to ignore that, but if your business is software, or primarily software, you kind of can't. Adobe, I have got a big grumble about the Adobe offer. I mean, I wasn't necessarily in that world when they started to do this stuff, because they really moved over to subscription early. They really did. I mean, how long ago was that? It's quite a while.
Yeah, and of course, unlike Avid, they moved lock, stock and barrel. It was subscription.
It was take it or leave it, because they knew how dominant they were, and they could say, well, just do it or just go away, because there wasn't really anywhere else to go. And there kind of still isn't. And this is something, I mean, have you ever used the GIMP? It's a graphics package.
You've got all sorts of GIMP stuff, you know, which is open source. So.
It's a terrible name, isn't it? But there we go. And I first came across that because it was available on Linux years ago. And I used to share a house with a kind of real hardcore Linux nerd who got me quite into that stuff. But I've never gone there myself. It's a bit too much like hard work. But looking at this is a case of kind of like I know Photoshop and I know what I need to know in Photoshop inside out. And I just want to get in and out. And I don't want to waste any time whatsoever transitioning to something else. It's a really useful alternative view of a lot of the conversations that we have around Pro Tools for disgruntled people around the move to subscription or update plans or but these rolling cost based regular income from Avid's point of view, which I'm not going to, you know, moan about at all, and it's not really what I want to talk about. But with this stuff, the Adobe one is so inflexible particularly at the bottom end, just because I was looking at this and I was thinking, okay, I use Final Cut when I do proper video editing, which isn't as much as quite a few on the team, but I use Final Cut for two reasons, because I know lots of other people who also use Final Cut, which is a really good reason for choosing the software that you happen to use. And I'll come on to that in a bit. But also because there wasn't a way that I could have Photoshop and Premiere. I could have Photoshop or I could have Photoshop and lots of everything other things else. That I wasn't going to use, one of which
you couldn't pick your own bundle.
But you can't do it. And this frustrates me a great deal. And I would probably be using Premiere today, actually, because I didn't, not that long ago, I didn't know Final Cut very well at all, particularly Final Cut 10, Final Cut X, whatever. I used to know 7 and I used to know Media Composer a bit, but it was kind of like I actively chose to go and invest some time in learning that because the offer from Adobe was so unattractive that I didn't go that way. And I actually wanted to go that way because of the cross-platform thing and thinking in the future and thinking, well, if I'm going to invest time in learning something. So this is a case of a subscription actively working against the platform for me because of the offer, they've lost a user. And I'm sure the Adobe execs are going to be losing sleep over the fact that I'm not using their product. But you know what I mean? Anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, talking of the Adobe model, I looked at it and I thought, it's a lot of money. What I've chosen to do, especially, I mean, I've got, is to go down the Elements route. So I have Photoshop Elements, and it does everything that I need to do. And it's like, I can't remember, it's sort of 75 quid or something. Mm. You know, one-off payment, you know, you can still buy a perpetual license of the Elements type stuff. I've got Premiere Elements, but I just don't use it because I do all my video editing in ScreenFlow, which is the software that most of us use to do video capture when we're doing, you know, screen.
And to be honest, capture. I do the majority of mine, and I do quite a bit of live action stuff in ScreenFlow.
Yes, I do all my live action in ScreenFlow because I understand it. I've messed with Final Cut, and I found again with ScreenFlow, I could to the level of video editing that I needed. It did everything that I wanted.
If you're cutting and shutting clips, then it's more and a bit of
crossfade, a bit of dissolve transitions and stuff, and fade in and fade out, and sometimes some little clever overlays and all the rest of it. I can do it all. So
it's interesting you mentioned the Elements thing because I mean I remember talking to you about that quite some time ago, and I don't think there's a demo or anything. You just have to buy it or not. Yeah. I think. But I remember looking at it and I just wasn't convinced enough that everything that I use in my full version of Photoshop was available because a lot of it was. But
The only thing that is a little bit of a challenge is if you want to do graduation layers between
That would bother me if you can't do layer masking and stuff.
Yeah. But it is quite tricky.
I think that's no sale already from my point of view in that case. So,
yeah, for the community members that have just tuned in, this isn't a DSLR channel. We're very much still production expert.
Obviously, the very nature of what we do here on Production Expert, we do quite a lot of Photoshop putting together. Obviously, every image that you see at the top of a story, we've done something.
Well, multimedia is a big thing anyway, I think, in today's music industry, because if you're making your own tracks, you're most likely shooting your own videos, you're most likely making the images for your Instagram account and your Facebook and all that sort of stuff. You're doing it all yourself, much like what we do at Production Expert. We're not just making articles, we make videos as well, and we've got to make graphics as well to put on the articles. It's multimedia. So if you're good in Photoshop, so Pro Tools or Logic or Studio One, you've got the confidence to have a little go with the other medias, and that's where this sort of stuff comes in. I've got a good tip for you guys, though. I haven't got, it's my wife's computer. She hasn't got Photoshop or anything on there, but every so often I will sit there and I'll do a little bit of work if my studio is being used by my wife. And if I need to use a Photoshop style editor, there's a free one online called Photopea. So Photopea. It's free. It works just like Photoshop. It's got the effects, it's got the layers, you can do it all, and you're doing it all within the web browser. So if you need to do some quick Photoshop-y bits with a web browser, check that out. That's got me out of a hole a few times. Yeah. Just a little tip there, you know, free tip.
Sounds so useful.
There was
something that I wanted to get onto on this stuff, which was this business about, because looking at my subscriptions, most of them are either media stuff. So, you know, Tidal, Amazon, Netflix, although I can't remember the last time I watched anything on Netflix. That's very much kind of like other people in the house use that one. But services, Squarespace, you know, FreshBooks and stuff like that. Let's not forget Zero Downtime, because that's...
No,
you know,
that's a subscription. I certainly would not be without that.
Yeah. But the other one that I'm thinking of is Dropbox. And I mean, I've got a Dropbox Pro subscription.
Yes.
And the reason I chose Dropbox is because it's what everyone else I work with uses. And this is where sometimes we have subscriptions, not because we choose to have them, but because of what we do or who we work with or who we know, we have to. Or it's so much more difficult not to use a particular platform. And this, I mean, this kind of ties in with the conversations we've had about streaming platforms. I very much feel like something of the kind of the oddball when I'm talking to anyone outside of my sort of like professional life. When we're talking about music streaming and I mention Tidal and they're like, is that Spotify? And I go, well, nearly, sort of, you know. But I mean, it was Russ who put me onto Spotify, but I mean, put me onto Tidal. There I go. That's Freudian, wasn't it? But with the hi-fi option and the lossless thing, that was just it for me completely of like, you know, absolutely, this is what I want, particularly as I start to do more and more stuff to do with testing monitors and headphones and, you know, that end of thing, transducers. And it's the best way I've found of really getting to know what something sounds like is just to have the whole of recorded music in front of you and da-da-da-da-da. I've never shared a playlist in my life. And the fact that I can't share my Spotify playlist with other Spotify users doesn't bother me at all. But to so many people that I speak to, that's the reason they'd never consider using Tidal, regardless of the hi-fi subscription or the master quality albums or whatever. Mm. If you can't do that kind of interaction with other users because you're no longer part of that club. That's what Dropbox is about for me. Is I just use Dropbox because I find I was included and shared into folders that were bigger than my account was, unless I put my hand in my pocket. And that's the only reason I've got it. Yeah. But, you know, sometimes we don't get to choose. That's what I'm saying.
One area we haven't talked about is more sort of conventional office-related stuff. So, for instance, I moved over to Microsoft 365 effectively, you know, because I wanted the latest versions of the Office suite. And I have to say that I've got a family account, and that gives me effectively 5 desktop licenses. So I can put, you know, Microsoft Office, Excel, Word, etc. on 5 different computers. It then also enables me to put it on, I think it's certainly 5, if not 10 mobile devices. So across the family, we can have the Microsoft Office suite on iPads, phones, etc. And it's like £80 a month. I'm sorry, £80 a year. And so that has now means that we always have the latest version of Microsoft whatever. I mean, I'm outside of the blog, etc. I'm a heavy user of PowerPoint. And so again, having the suite of Office applications is very, very useful. And it's not, you know, again, I could choose to buy, you know, a copy of Microsoft Office, but it's £200-300 for the equivalent of a perpetual license. Well, when you consider how many licenses we effectively get by having a family account, that's a really good deal in my book.
I'm going to have to jump. I've been trying to put my life on a trajectory where I can totally remove all Microsoft Office products from it. Because I have a special place in hell reserved for Microsoft Office. I mean, honestly, and that's a really good example of a piece of software that gets used because it's what people use.
Yes.
And absolutely, and people, particularly people who've learnt to use products because it's what they had at work. I've had this particular struggle in my house, and I think I've managed to, well, I mean, we haven't had any of those, but I actually had to buy copies of Microsoft Office products, not for me, but for Maxine, just because she understood that stuff and it's what she wanted. And I was trying to explain that there were alternatives that I thought were better. But the amount of time I've spent trying to show people, not necessarily, but just people throughout my kind of professional life, how to do things in Word that are almost deliberately complicated and difficult to achieve, which are so much easier in, for example, Pages or Google Docs or any of
exactly,
these things.
Because essentially what a lot of people now are doing is what we would describe as desktop publishing. And there is no way in a million years Microsoft Word is desktop publishing.
And they'd say that's not what it's for, and I'd agree completely. But the
amount of use that people when people aren't just doing a bit of word processing, they're doing desktop publishing.
We're getting heavily away from audio here. We are. You must have downloaded forms from the council's a really good one for this, and you've got a beautiful looking document that's entirely uneditable because of the way it's been put together, so that it prints well but works terribly. And we need to pull back from the whole Office conversation.
The last thing I want to throw into this subscriptions is virus protection. And again, we have a family account Intego Security. And again, very cost effective because it means, yes, we are all on Macs, but my view is that you still need virus protection, not least of which because you can effectively hand on some Windows-related viruses. But it's also just, you know, it's just being sensible. That's the other thing that I effectively.
I will add to that one, Mike. Clean my Mac.
Oh,
another one that's on mine that I was going to next. Actually,
go for it.
No, yeah, clean my Mac. Absolutely, and I'd forgotten actually that was a
subscription
until just the other
automatic
day when it popped up, and I went,
it's automatic, and when it goes ping on my phone once a year, you know, your payment's been made automatically. I'm like, that's fine, absolutely no problem. It stops my Mac from circling the drain God knows how many times.
Yes.
So, yeah, very, very useful. And it's just one of those bits of software that walks you through very gently everything it's doing, and you trust it. Do you know what I mean? I like that. I don't like software that can be a bit complex or scaremongers you. Now, I did do Norton's, I think it was a year before last, because one of the Mac minis that we got went a bit crazy. And I thought, there's something not right with this. I've not experienced this behavior. It kind of looked like someone was constantly trying to hack into it. So I thought, I need to put something in place here. So I put Norton's on it for a year. And that was constantly scaring me. Like, your computer's got this virus and it's got that. We must do something about it now. Bloody hell, I'm just going to turn the machine off.
We've had this before with stuff that we put on the blog. And we've had some quite, you know, angry people get in touch saying that we're distributing viruses, when actually what it is they've got overcautious alarmist antivirus software that flags up anything that isn't digitally signed as being a potential threat, when actually what it is it's not verifiably not a threat, which is a very different thing. And for small developers, lots of them aren't You know, verified and digitally signed and all of the things you have to be to be, you know, not everybody is Microsoft or Adobe or, you know.
But I think what's interesting is we, certainly the three of us around this table, we seem very happy to be spending money on subscriptions for our business, you know, and obviously that extends, you know, to internet and phones and all the rest of it. That said, you know, some of those things, it's harder to do as a sort of perpetual license, as it were. But we tend not to, and I think this may well be beyond this table. I just wonder whether we're happy to spend money on subscriptions, you know, as a audio professional industry. We're happy to spend subscriptions for business-related stuff, but we kind of still want to own, in inverted commas, because of course you never own it, but we won't go down that rabbit hole, but to have perpetual licenses for our audio production tools. And I think that's a very interesting delineation that I certainly feel is out there in the industry.
Yes, but that's going to change over the years, I think. It's going to be the dinosaur way of thinking of things. If you go back, I don't know, 5 years ago, maybe a bit more than that. Just trying to think. I had a Waves bundle. I had a Slate Digital bundle. I had a FabFilter bundle. I just basically went for all the plugins all the time. And I was buying them when they were on good deals like Black Friday or any other points in the year where I thought, that's actually a pretty good deal, I'm going to buy that bundle. So I conditioned myself with this huge collection of plugins. And that's not really going to be the case, let's say, in 10 years. I reckon everything's going to be subscription, absolutely everything. It kind of is if you've got an iPad, you know, the iOS world, free app, brilliant. Yeah, but if you want to actually use this, it's going to cost you. And I know this as well because my kids, they've got all iPads, and if they want something on it, you go free app. Oh, right. Okay. So we kind of conditioned ourselves to believe that we should have and that we are allowed to have all of these plugin libraries. But I reckon what's going to happen over the years moving forward is that people won't think like I used to, going, I've got to have all the bundles from all the developers. You're going to go where you know, and you're going to go, okay, I'm just going to subscribe to the FabFilter stuff because I know that stuff for me works really well. Maybe one other. Not every single plugin manufacturer needs to be in my plugin folder. Do you know what I mean? You know what I'm trying to say? Is that, otherwise, things start to get really, really, really expensive. So if you're a songwriter, let's say songwriter, producer, two bundles you would probably go for is the East-West bundle, the Creative Composer Cloud, and a plugin bundle. Well, there you go. That's probably about $50, $60 a month.
And of course, Dan, we must remember, and it'll be worth putting a link to it in the podcast article, our subscription calculator.
You beat me to it because I'm looking right at it. Yes, we put this together year before last, kind of in response to this conversation that we've had many times before. And I thought, well, if we put most of the top plugin subscription or audio production related subscription services that are out there together, you can add this stuff up over a monthly or annual term, and things can get quite expensive. So let's go for just a quick idea, you know, like a Avid bundle of plugins is $5 a month. Put that in with East West, for instance, that's $35 a month. If you go for some other brands, typically $24 a month. Maybe the Slate one is about $20. You can, you know, end up sort of committing to quite a large payout if you feel that you need all of those plugin subscriptions going. Generally what I find, after a certain amount of time, let's say 6 months, I'm subscribing to something. It doesn't always need to be audio related. It could be anything in my personal budget or business budget. I've got to look back and go, am I getting value from this? It's not the brand's fault. Am I getting value from that service? And if not, I've got to cancel it and then find out with a little bit of time if I can, you know, if I should go back into paying for that subscription. Do you know what I mean? I dropped Apple Music a couple of years ago. I paid for that for a year. I never used it and I stopped using it, switched to Spotify. And I really, really loved using Spotify because I found it easier to find the music I love to listen to. Apple Music was terrible. It was so bad. I was paying for it for months and months and just not listening to it. So sometimes that's the case. We subscribe to things and we don't actually evaluate its worthiness.
Maybe. No, and I think that's very important. I mean, you know, if we, as businesses, as professionals earning a living from these tools, you know, that return on investment is an important criteria. And, you know, as you did because Spotify gives you a report of how much, you know, how many streams you've done, you can get a sense of, what sort of return investment I've got, because you've been able to listen to a lot of music very cost effectively. And I think, again, we need as creatives, we are so often not as good business people and not as good at managing our finances. And so I think as you found, Dan, when you did your annual accounts, you've been able to identify and tot up, because you've been doing it all together, to see what your spend is and analyze that and say, well, actually, has it been worth spending that? No, well, okay, let's cancel that subscription. It's a risk assessment, it's a valuation, but I mean, that's the same with other things that we do. You know, insurance policies, I mean, some obviously have to be there because, you know, legally, but a lot of them are things we do out of choice. It's a risk assessment. But again, as businesses, if we know, the great thing about rental subscription is you know what your costs are going to be. Each month, you know it's going to cost you this. There isn't a surprise when a new version comes out. You think, oh, I've got to spend money. I wasn't planning for this. I mean, it's a story I've told before, but I remember a number of times of talking to other professionals in facilities houses, production houses, saying, oh, well, you've got the latest version of Pro Tools. Well, no, I don't actually, because the upgrade came in and we'd done our budget and there wasn't the budget to buy the upgrade. We'll have to wait until our next annual budget comes through and then we can spend the money.
Do you remember Pro Tools 11, when that came out, what was that, about 6 years ago? Something like that. When that came out, I was absolutely skint, but my Pro Tools HDX system was really suffering with Pro Tools 10. It's just, it wasn't working properly. 32-bit thing, all that. Anyway, cut a long story short, I was absolutely broke. What I did was I rung up one of the dealers. They sent me a box set and I bought it on finance, paid it off over 12 monthly installments over a year. Mm. I effectively subscribed to Pro Tools before it was even a thing. And I remember thinking, this is not a bad thing, because the same as you were just saying there, Mike, every time there was a new version of Pro Tools pre-subscription, it was, oh God, I haven't got the money. but I really want it.
Yeah, with subscription, you know what your costs are going to be. Yeah. There's no surprises. And I think for businesses, that can actually be a really useful thing. Now, if you're not regularly earning your living from it, then having those regular outgoings can be a drain, and to be able to buy into something and then not worry that it's going to stop working if you stop paying has merit. So I think this is very much horses for courses, and I for one certainly hope that Avid don't go down the Adobe route and basically stop perpetual licenses, because there's been, you know, with the recent reinstatement discontinuation that Avid have announced, so you won't be able to buy back in to a upgrade plan as of the end of this year, that there's been quite a bit of discussion in the comments that this is another indication that Avid are going down, is sort of moving across to a rental subscription model only. And I really hope that that doesn't happen. I would really much prefer them to offer both and allow us as users to choose which works for us. But yeah, we'll see.
There's a thing that occurs to me when I hear things like this, and this is when I see questions or queries posed on, I mean, all sorts of places from Pro Tools users. And you look at the question, it's got, you know, I've just bought this completely up-to-date plugin and I can't get it to install on my Pro Tools 8 empowered system, or you know, something like that. And it's like, seriously, you know. But the thing about it is, and the thing that it's really important to keep in mind is, from a brand's point of view, while they don't actively want to upset anyone, there are people that they want to keep happy. And if you buy a perpetual license of Pro Tools HD, for example, that's, how much is that? Is that about $2,500 to go in straight away? It's something like that, isn't it?
Mm.
Okay. And then compared to someone who's prepared to pay £50 for a DAW and thinks that they represent, or that their opinion is equally as valuable as a professional user. No, no, there are 50 of you compared to the value of one person who's actually just stumping up the cash. And this is just sums its business. It's kind of like, look, if you're spending a lot, then you are more important. And that's why people get, you know, preposterously pampered in ultra high end hotels compared to get, you know, glowered at by somebody who's on the 24-hour thing at the kind of £50 a night. There's no such thing as a £50 a night hotel anymore, I don't think. But you take my point. Mm. And there is a value that goes with people. And that gets completely leveled out by rentals. It's just kind of, you're here or you're not. And if it's properly set up so it's flexible enough so that people aren't paying for something that they don't want, and they can get off and they can get back on, then suddenly the onus is right back onto the brand. To they need to give you what you want, because you can go anytime and you can come back anytime. And, you know, people, this is the way these things work. This is why it's easy to unsubscribe or to resubscribe, is because if it doesn't represent much of a commitment, then you're only signing up for a month at a time. That's great. This is the whole difference between your kind of like, you know, 48-month phone contract compared to, you know, a rolling monthly. It's kind of like, well, who's got to look after you more in this situation? And if you've got a good rental agreement, that is so much better for the consumer than a fixed, you know, buyout, if you like. And I think that's really worth keeping in mind. It's not just for the brand. It's for the consumer as well, because of, you know, the position it puts the brand in.
Very good point.
It's always going to come down to budget.
Yeah.
All this is always going to come down to budget. And if you really are making a lot of noise about this stuff, you know, maybe you need to have the numbers in front of you, your budget. You need to know exactly what you can afford to spend every month or every year before you even have the argument or the debate about it. Otherwise, you can't get involved. You know, if you've got $100 per month, you go, that's fine, I'm happy to burn that on plug-in subscriptions and Avid and all these other bits and bobs, and you're happy to spend that, that's fine. But if you go over that by $50, then that's your own budget problems. You know, it's, if you can't afford to spend anything, don't. There's other options. You know, there's no point paying just to be, for Pro Tools Avid if you really cannot afford to do it. It's not the only DAW out there. It really isn't. And a bit like what I said about the Photoshop thing, it's not on my wife's machine. But I found something else. Mike, I'm sure you don't even realise I've made some of the hero images for Production Expert with it. Doesn't matter, I mean, does it?
Yeah.
Well, that's another point about software, is nobody cares what you used.
No.
Exactly.
No, exactly. They don't at all.
No, and I think we'll probably need to move along at this point. So, yes, the Production Expert. Yes, so if you are a little strapped for cash, we have the Production Expert Christmas Prize Draw competition. And throughout this month, we're offering the opportunity for over 30 people to win a prize of your choice from an amazing bundle of prizes that we've pulled together from our very generous partners, worth in total over £30,000. So each day during this month, we are publishing an article in which we take a closer look at each one of the prizes in turn. So if you're not quite sure about some of the prizes, then do watch out for one of our detailed product profile articles on each of the prizes in our 2019 prize draw competition. So take a look at the prizes and then enter the competition, and most importantly, tell us which prize you would like to win. And then we'll announce all the winners of the 31 prizes in about middle of January, once we've contacted all the winners. So please don't email us on the 2nd of January and saying, have I won? Because we won't announce the winners until we've contacted them all. I think at this point we will move along.
The Pro Tools Expert podcast is created using Source Connect Now from Source Elements. Register now for your free account at now.source-elements.com.
If you've ever tried to do interviews over the internet with apps like Skype, you will know how hit and miss the audio quality and connection can be, and even on a good day, it isn't really good enough for a long-form interview. We now use Source Connect Now, which offers ISDN equivalent quality audio using a Chrome browser. No software to install. To get your free copy, follow the link in the podcast notes.
Okay, so find of the week, and these are sponsored by RSPE Audio Solutions.
RSPE Audio carries nearly every great microphone you can think of, from budget to boutique. They have microphones from Sennheiser, Neumann, Earthworks, Shure, Lauten, Peluso, AKG, Blue, Townsend Labs, Antelope, and many more. Not sure what mic you need? RSPE's team can help. Just tell them the work you do and they can recommend a few mics. Plus, if you're in LA, you can book a demo so you can try them out before you buy. Shop online or contact their team to find the right mic for you.
Yes, and if you remember last week's, if anybody listened to last week's show talking about RSPE, you need to listen to Emma's version of RSPE audio, but there we go. We shall move on before she gets very upset. But yeah, I mean, it was quite funny actually, because she on her own social media was commented on me laughing at her for her pronunciation of RSPE. And but anyway, we shall move along. Julian, what's your find of this week?
Okay, this was unexpected. I went to a gig last week. And it was interesting for lots of reasons, but the one I'll concentrate on here is one of the acts who I'll have as my find of the week. Her name is Inka Apendo, which is a Finnish name, which is why it's unusual. And she was amazing. She was brilliant. And the thing that I particularly liked about her was that she was. I've seen lots of people trying to do real tech-heavy live performance, either looping or using computers and laptops and things and controllerism and loads of things like that. And while I'm sure there are people out there who are really good, everything I've ever seen has in some way been kind of like constrained or limited by the technology. A really easy example of this is people who do looping-based stuff with, you know, like a loop station or any kind of looping delay type thing. And while it might be very clever and very entertaining, musically, it's always kind of held back by the fact that it's a loop and it's building up phrase on phrase, which doesn't, and it lacks flexibility. Really good people manage to disguise that, but it's always there. Well, what she did was she did stuff with Ableton, and she had a push controller, and she had a couple of mics, one for live singing and then another one to feed stuff in for live sampling. She had an acoustic guitar, which she used a bit, but mostly just as a source for sampling and processing. And it was the best, most fluent, like tech-heavy Ableton performance I've ever seen. She was fantastic. Really, really good. I've looked her up online, and her stuff online, it's good. But it's nowhere near as good as the live stuff was. It's a shame that there's a bit of a gap for me between the live experience and how impressive that was and the online stuff, which is very good. But seriously, the thing I was impressed by was the live performance. There are some videos that I've found on YouTube of her doing a thing, and that represents it better, even if it's at the expense of quality like these things sometimes are. But yeah, Inka Apendo, amazing. Like, real eye-opener for me.
Dan, what about you? What's your finder this week?
It was fine of last week, really, but it's left a big impression on me. Last week, I went to Red Bull Studios in London with James, and it was the Studio One 4.6 events, which was really, actually, really good. The main feature in this, I mean, the news will be out now by the time that this podcast is published, is Ampere, the latest version, being the guitar amp simulator, Presonus's version. I'm dubbing it the 11 rack killer. It is absolutely brilliant. Paul Drew was up there doing his guitar thing, and yeah, jaws were on the ground. Not well, obviously, because Paul's playing is outstanding, but the sound quality of this thing was really absolutely amazing. Yeah, I'm looking forward to having a go with that in my studio, hopefully in a couple of days when it gets released. I've been playing around with Studio One a little bit more recently, and yeah, it's I'm getting it now. I'm understanding what it's all about. I've learnt not to come at it from a Pro Tools background. I'm trying to come at it from a Studio One beginning, if you know what I mean.
It's a classic thing when people learn a new tool, a new DAW, for instance. You immediately try and say, well, can it do this, as in a particular workflow that, say, Pro Tools does? And it's always been frustrating when I've been teaching people to use Pro Tools, and they may come from a different platform, and their sort of first question is, can it do this? And what I try and do is to teach the workflows that are convenient for that particular DAW, in my case, teaching Pro Tools. Because it's about workflows, and I think this is exactly what you're picking up, is actually working out the best way to do the thing that you need to achieve using the tools that are in Studio One, rather than using the tools and the workflows that are in Pro Tools and trying to do a cross grade in terms of workflow.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work. So yeah, the exciting times actually. So I'm going to put some time aside over the Christmas period. You know, no inbox, no clients pestering me for things. I'm going to come down here for a day when I'm well relaxed and make a song in it. You know, no Pro Tools, going to go for it. Go for Studio One and see what happens and have some fun. But that Empire is very special. I'm sure we'll have some content up very soon of that. Mike, what's your find of the week?
Well, my find of the week comes from the release of the new Pro Tools Avid Control app, which of course is the new version of what was the Pro Tools Control app. Free app originally. The Pro Tools Control app was only iOS. With the new version, I could not install it on my ancient iPad because I can't go beyond iOS 9.3 point something, it being a pretty old iPad. And so the door was closed, or still is closed effectively for me, in terms of getting the new Avid Control app. So, but of course, the good news with the Avid Control app is it isn't just iOS. It's Android and it's Amazon Fire. And so I was thinking, ooh, I could go and get an Amazon Fire tablet and use that for my Avid Control app. And so I started looking around on Amazon, and of course the recommended one is the HD 10, and that isn't silly money. But I then started thinking, well, what about the Fire H? And that's here in the UK about £80 sterling. But then I noticed that you could get a refurbished one from Amazon for £40. So I'm going to be able to get a pretty reasonable tablet that will run the Avid Control app for £40. A very cost-effective entry point, if I do say so myself.
Oh, yeah.
So on that revelation, it's good night from me.
It's good night from me.
And it's good night from me.
Good night.